It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley is here. And the new Windows is here. Windows 2004 comes out today. We'll talk about how to get it, why you might not want to get it, what it does. It's the latest version of Windows. We'll also look back at the weekend build. And Paul will tell us the one area where Sony is losing to Microsoft in gaming. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 674, recorded Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. Microsoft Dungeons. Windows Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Now that a lot of you are working from home, it's even more important to choose a VPN you trust to protect you from online threats. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that's all about Microsoft. Here she is from allaboutmicrosoft.com, aptly named Mary Jo Foley. The crowd goes wild. On the left, in the blue trunks, weighing in at 202 pounds, Mr. Paul Thurrott.
I'm not wearing trunks. This is work from home era, baby.
Shiny sateen trunks. He is from Thurrott.com. Together, they actually are the dynamic duo of Windows coverage, of Microsoft coverage. And each week we talk about it here. This is a red letter day.
It is.
Very important day in the world of Microsoft. Will you allow me? Do you have the gong, Mary Jo? The new Windows is here. The new Windows is here. The new Windows is here.
Don't you have a
We need a vuvuzela for that.
Yeah. Na, na, na. When OMG Chad Johnson had his 1,000,000th subscriber to his OMG Craft channel. Nice going, Chad. He had one of those things. I wish I had one. It shoots confetti in the air.
Yeah.
And it really did a nice job. I mean, it's like really good. So. Right. John, let's get a few of those for the studio.
Is that an essential item I can get on from Amazon tomorrow?
Oh, wait a minute.
I think you probably could.
Nobody's allowed in here, not even the janitor. It means I'd have to clean it up, so never mind.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I care about those things.
See?
We'll do a virtual wipe. We'll do a... I'm sure in the TriCaster we have something like that. But Windows 10, 2004, I'm going to say it right. 2004, because if you say 2004, people get very confused.
Yeah.
Very upset. It's not really a divisive issue.
It is.
It's all the ADD in our industry. They just can't take it.
Like right now, there's somebody saying, Leo, the lower third isn't even on the left and the right.
My color looks darker than Mary Jo's. Is there something?
Yeah. No, we're an OCD bunch, and we care about these things. Yeah. Just, you know, if I move the clock 1 inch...
Yeah,
people complain.
Know.
Oh man, they complain. So I have to relax and understand that's just the nature of the biz. It's the nature of the biz. We also don't like it. It's 04 instead of 05.
There's so many names for this thing though, right? 2004.
Yeah.
May 2020 update. 20H1 update, and if you want to use the code name Vibranium, right?
You know,
like so, there's. Lots of ways
I've
to talk about.
I've complained about this a lot, and Microsoft always gets this wrong. They call the version of Windows 10 the name of the update, and the update is the thing you do to get to that version of Windows 10.
Yeah.
This is not difficult.
What should they call it? Tell us.
I know.
They should call it yogurt. Who cares at this point? It's just.
Why don't we call it like feature update 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
That probably wouldn't work either,
but.
Well, that's what Apple does. It's still a little confusing. It's Mac OS X, which means 10.15.5. That's our current version. Is that better? Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
iOS is on, 13 point something now?
4.5 or 5 or whatever it is. Yeah, 13.4.1.
I mean, I, Honestly, anything that increments is fine. The year naming to me makes sense only because it's clear, which is newer.
Increment is nice because it's not tied to a date, and you know if you're one less, you're short, and if you're one more, you're smoking something.
I mean, Microsoft could just a million things they could do. You know, this could be Windows 10 version 5.0 or something, or 6.0, and then the fall one could be 6.5 or whatever. But they've chosen what they've chosen poorly. They've changed it a few times.
It seems this is endemic in the tech industry. The namings and the numberings and the things. It's just hard.
Naming is hard. People always say
it's not easy. It's a tough computer science problem.
It is.
Well, it's hard to please everybody too.
Yeah, can't please everybody. So,
it's here.
What do we have to say about it? When you say it's here, does that mean like if I open up my Windows device right now and say update, I'll get it? Would that make me a seeker?
Yes.
Yes, that would make you a seeker. But
so I shouldn't.
I don't know. No, if you don't want it right now, you should not.
Honestly, but how do we feel about this? Right now, granted, 2 days from now we'll regret these words, but this is the longest they've ever tested any version of Windows 10 by far.
But you know what? You just said this on Twitter. I saw you. Why are all these known problems just being listed today in their release notes that we didn't know?
You've raised my biggest pet peeve of all, which is I don't like people using my own words against me.
But I use them correctly, at least.
Was that the tweet that Twitter said, this tweet, you should look at it and see if there's anything more accurate? they warn people. Let me just see. No. So you're saying if I just let this sit and just stew for a while.
First of all, let me just address the thing Mary Jo brought up.
Okay.
Because one of the unfortunate things that just happened was, as part of the announcement, they said, oh, by the way, here's a list of known issues.
Yeah.
And these are blockers for getting it deployed. So if you have one of these things, one of these problems, you're not going to see the update.
Oh, okay.
The issue isn't – see, that's fine. That supports the theory that if you do get it, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
The problem I have with that is none of those issues have ever come up, not once, over the 18 months that this thing was in testing. They every blog post they have a list of known issues, and nothing on the list today was ever once listed in that list.
Well, they weren't sure. Maybe it would just go away.
That's like how men react to the doctor. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I have a rash.
It could just go away. Yeah, I do that. Definite.
Maybe it's not a good policy.
It'll heal itself.
Well, yes. I'm gonna walk it off.
Walk it off.
Yeah. You have an ACL break. You're not walking it off.
Rub some dirt in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what's different on the seeker thing today? I don't know if you also notice this, but if you do seek it today, you might not get it.
Yes.
Because they added this text saying you may not see the option to download and install on your device because we're slowly throttling up availability over the coming weeks. That's new because usually if you seek, you find. Words to live by.
And ye shall find.
Don't look if you don't want to find it.
It's very biblical.
I know, right?
It's almost like they brought A/B testing to stable.
Oh, I hope they don't do that.
No, they say it's because there are a bunch of compatibility blockers. That's that list Paul was talking about, things, known issues. There's a bunch of those. I also, this is my personal view, I don't think they were ready still to release this, but they kept saying it's the May update. It's going to be out in May. And so it's like we're running out of May now, so we got to do this, even if we're not quite ready.
Oh, boy. I hate when you get to the end of your May.
When you're at the end of your May and you said May 2020 update, you know you don't want to have it be in June or July. They did that once before, right? Didn't they call something the March update and it came out in May or something? So
version number says 4. The name of the update says May.
Yeah.
If the thing comes out in June and you've done this a second time, you look like jerks for sure.
Yeah. Right. I think I agree with you though that they've tested this for so long. It's been done since December, right? They've been fixing it.
Yep.
Fixing bugs, adding small updates, no new features since December, right? So it should be very solid. Once you have an opportunity to get it, I don't think I'd be afraid to take it.
If I wear a mask, can I not get it?
Yeah. Can you have a mask prevent the update? That would be new.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, the unfortunate reality is that once these things get out into the real world, things happen that we didn't experience during the beta. Yeah. But, you know, I still feel pretty good about this one. Again, I will rue those words next week. Every indication is that this one's going to go pretty smoothly.
I think so.
He says with great confidence.
I think so. No, I do feel like that too. Like if I sought it today and saw that I could get it, I would take it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a living on the edge.
But you're not seeking
person.
It.
Well, no. I haven't yet. Just because I didn't want to do it right before the show and then have something go wrong.
That's right.
You should do it right now. You should do it.
Unlike you guys who like to do updates in the middle of Windows Weekly, I am a little more cautious.
Just look. Just see what it says. Just look.
It's okay. I know, because I can still not download it, right?
If
I see.
You just look.
Did you look for yours?
Oh, I've been running this thing for like 6 months.
Mainstream version.
Well, I mean, you get whatever.
It's the exact same version. I know.
It is because they've been updating it, right? So it's the same.
I have an update. An update to 1909 that's showing up. So no.
Yes. You're going to have to do that first. But then that will require an update. So
I know.
I don't know why you looked. That was silly. Why'd you do that?
She became a seeker. Look at that.
Listen to you guys. What am I listening to you guys for?
I told you not to look. I don't know what's going on here.
Don't look. Close your eyes.
Okay. So.
Yeah. But what's there to say about it besides like, yeah.
What
here
is
it
there
is?
To say about it?
Well, there are new features, right? And I think, I wrote that my article about what's new in this release so long ago, I couldn't even find it. But it's, you know, because, well, it's been done for so long. But there are some big updates. We talk a lot about the subsystem for Linux 2, which obviously is a big deal. I think, honestly, a lot of the stuff that's in here that's good is for power users, right? So that you could name virtual desktops. You know, the Xbox overlay for games provides provides support for third party plugins. And by the way, my favorite feature, this is hilarious. Notepad has added support for text zooming, right? Where'd they get this idea, you ask? Oh, because the Notepad that I wrote last year has that feature.
Oh, you invented it.
They copied you?
Oh, by the way.
Yes.
The menu names and system that they use to do zooming is exactly the same as mine.
Paul, don't go crazy.
Guys, all we have to say is start your photocopiers, Redmond.
Thank you.
Come on,
get them
Paul.
Set to Lower McCunchy Valley and
stuff. No, it's okay, guys. $11 billion in revenues a quarter. And who did they rip off? Slack, Oracle? No. Little Paul here in the corner.
Little .NET project. Oh, man. How dare they?
That's cool. It's the right thing to do. It's a good feature. That's why I added it.
Maybe it's just a coincidence.
Could it be?
You think
it's an obvious feature. So when I finished the app, what else could I add to this?
Zoom.
And I looked at Microsoft Word. I was like, oh, they have a Zoom feature.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll add it as if it was in Notepad. How would Notepad do it? Oh, apparently, they'll do it exactly the way I do it.
Nice.
But again, there's no grudge. It's good. It's all good.
No hard feelings. You can send the check to blah, 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 blah. So
probably stole my code, too.
Yeah, bastards. How dare you?
No, you know what? There's a separate blog post that's not part of the main blog post today that has a whole list of features for IT pros that I thought was good. And so things like improved controls and diagnostics for Windows setup, reserve storage, more granular settings for reserve storage, application guard and cridge, FIDO2 security key support expansion. Like there's a whole list of other stuff. And you know what? It makes me think, why don't they list those features in the main blog? Because most users of Windows are business users, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're not IT pros necessarily, but those are the features they're going to care about more than Kimoji.
Kimoji.
Kimoji. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
You say that you don't see UI. I see words like emoji and Kimoji in a blog post, and I don't see that.
I know.
It's like a redacted thing we get from a government document. It's just blacked out. I don't even look at it.
Is it possible that Bubble Witch is a blocker? Is that possibly? I am not kidding.
I hope so. Well, what's version are you on, Leo? Run the app and go into
Bubble Witch 10. Could be.
You can start seeking, but just don't download it. You can seek.
You can seek without downloading?
Yes.
It won't trigger it. Then you're going to get a lot of announcements.
Eventually it will, but yeah. It will just show you it's there. It's ready.
It won't do it during the show, though, at least.
No.
That's all I care about.
Unless you wanted to do it during the show.
Gone is the day that I ran the show on the same machine that I updated. Paul remembers those days.
That was one of the best experiences of the show. This is so amazing because you get to see it happening in real time. I'm like,
No.
Disconnected because he rebooted the computer.
Should I hit return? No.
He's gone.
Click. Yep. That was a long time ago.
I'm going to throw in some more enterprise content while you're clicking.
Okay.
Okay. Besides being available to seekers, it's on the VLSC, the Volume License Servicing Center today. 2004 is. It's also on Windows Updates, Windows Server Update Services, WSUS, Windows Update for Business, and Windows Server 2004 is also available generally today. So these are all the things that you don't see in the blinking text, the headlines. You see, you know, this is just like stuff business users would care about that they don't really care to highlight.
Okay.
Fine.
That's, you know, Mary Jo's job.
That's my job.
To do the marketing Microsoft refuses to do.
That's right.
Yes.
Won't tell anybody.
No, don't tell anybody.
Speaking of launches, we're waiting to hear about the Dragon module, the SpaceX launch. First manned launch. I saw this headline. I thought this can't be true. First manned launch in 11 years from the U.S.? That's hard to believe. Is that right?
Since
2011? Was it? I don't remember. Anyway, it's been a long time.
Yeah, I mean, right.
9 years. Since 2011, I think is what it is. Yeah. Okay. How can it be that long? We haven't done one.
I know. That does seem weird.
Yeah, 9 years. So we'll keep an eye on that. They're possibly, I don't know what they're doing. They're waiting to see if it rains.
Yeah.
We don't know what'll happen. It might rain. It might not rain. So what else is there to say? The only reason I mentioned that is because you said the word launch and I got all excited and then I realized I was talking about Windows 2004.
You know what I'm surprised they didn't do today? And maybe it's just it would have been too much to do this all at once. But I thought they might start rolling out Credge to mainstream users for Windows Update.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Like, would I get Credge with this? No.
No. No.
Oh, well.
Yep.
One thing at a time, I guess.
Doing this on a Wednesday is kind of a weird schedule.
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the holiday threw things off, right? So maybe they would have done it on a Tuesday.
So, you know, in the same way that your garbage gets collected a day later, they upgrade a new version of Windows.
Exactly like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
Well, okay.
No, you know, it's good this is out because it kind of clears the path for 20H2 now, which is almost done.
Yeah, right.
Right. Because 20H2 should be fall.
It
should be up in the fall.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's really a tough adjustment, right? And if you know, we talked about this before, but if you kind of go back in time to, I think it was February 2019, and all of a sudden they switched the fast ring at that time, if I remember correctly, over to, it might have been actually skip ahead, whatever it was at the time, they jumped forward to 20H1. Everyone was like, what?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was really confusing. And we thought, oh, wow, you know. And they never talked about 19. They never talked about 19H2 at that time. Just don't worry, we'll talk about this later. And then when they finally said something about it, it was like, it's nothing. It's just,
no big deal.
It's just a cumulative update. We had to wait 6 months for that news. And then, you know, this thing kind of chugged along and it was done in December. And it is 5 months later.
Yeah.
And so like, why did they just want to make sure they got it right this time? Is that really it? They stung a little bit by the...
No.
Yeah, no, it's
they moved the engineering schedule. When they merged the Windows engineering team in with Azure engineering, the word is that they had to sync up with the Azure engineering schedule. And Azure is on semesters that end in June and in December. So before, Microsoft was on a completely different schedule with Windows. But once they combined those teams, it's like, oh, you know what? We should all be on the same semester schedule. And you should start using our code names from the periodic table.
Yeah. Is there a vibranium in the real world?
No.
So it's not in the periodic table.
Right. So, vibranium took the place of chromium because they realized chromium was going to be super.
Used. Yeah.
And like with the browser and stuff, they were like, you know what? That's going to be even more confusing than saying 2004. Like if we say chromium.
Microsoft, a little self-awareness there.
I know. Right. So vibranium. Yep. Vibranium came after vanadium.
Yeah. Vanadium's real.
Yes. Vibranium
is not. Vibranium sounds like a mutant X Factor thing.
Isn't vibranium Captain America's shield?
Oh, it might be, yeah.
Mary Jo.
I think Rich Woods taught me that.
Why do you know that?
Rich Woods taught me that. I did from Neowen. I did not know that on my own.
That's the word you're going to use?
And he was horrified when I didn't know it. No, he said to me, "Do you know what vibranium is, right?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Mary Jo, really?
Do you know where it's mined? Wakanda.
Should I know that?
Yeah, Wakanda.
It was Wakanda?
Yeah. It's made. Black Panther wears a vibranium suit.
Mm-hmm. I did see Black Panther and loved it.
Isn't that great? That was the greatest Marvel movie.
Any of the
movie.
Other Marvels, yeah. I don't think.
Vibranium definitely has that Marvel smell.
That new car smell.
That new Marvel smell. Comic book
like
smell.
A Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there is. Wouldn't it be funny if there was Stan Lee cameo in 2004? That I would dig. Hmm. It just popped up instead of Bubble Witch 3.
Right.
That's interesting.
So, thinking about the schedule thing with 20H1, it was kind of a 15-month kind of schedule. But now that the things are aligned, the earliest that they could start testing 20H1 will be this coming month, right? And there was actually a blog post where the Linux subsystem guys actually said that, and then it was kind of yanked out. So we're still going to actually test next year, assuming they're on the same schedule, next year's major release for a pretty good amount of time, right?
Yeah.
At least that's at least 6 months.
Yep.
Right. And then plus the post, final code stuff testing. And then 19H2. Are we on? Is there anyone on 19H2? Yeah, we are. We are on 19H2 because the fast ring is on.
We're all on 19H2. So that's 19.
So when did that switch over? That must have been February.
So do you mean 20H2 or do you mean 19H2?
Yeah, I'm mixing these things up. So we switched. The fast ring is currently on 19H2. They're on the 19,000 we're built. No?
20H2.
They can't be on 20H2. Oh, 20H2. Right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep. Sorry. Pandemic. Sorry.
I need gone.
20H2. Right. And I'm sorry. And I guess what I was referring to earlier was more like 21H1. Sorry.
21H1 and 20H2.
So sometime in the next... people are going to listen to this podcast and be yelling at their phone.
They will. They're like, Paul, you said this. They'll tweet to you and they'll be like, oh, wait.
Paul doesn't know anything about Windows. What a jerk. So, sorry.
FastRing is testing 20H2 basically right now, even though Microsoft doesn't want us to say it that way. But that's what's happening.
Yeah. What's he going to call it? And then, so 21H1 testing could begin as soon as June. Hmm. To correct what I said earlier. Sorry about that.
End of June, right? Yeah, end of June.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
21H1.
I'm glad we cleared this up.
And as we said earlier, as long as you increment it in some way, it's perfectly logical.
Right.
Easy to remember.
Yeah. It's like one of those binary clocks where it's telling you the time, but you don't know what the magic code is to understand it.
Right.
And then somebody comes along and says, well, it's obvious if you just look at that. It's, it's 1140.
I think we should just use code names. The code names are way better, right?
Yeah, vibranium's a great code name.
See, I have a harder time with that.
What's the next one?
Manganese is the code name for 20H2.
Yeah.
And then Iron is the code name for 21H1.
Iron. Wow.
Yeah.
So they're going through the periodic table numerically.
Periodic table.
Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What are they going to do when they run out of periodic table?
They never will run out of the periodic
table. Then we'll use the Marvel Comic Universe periodic table.
Yes. We're going to use the planets of Star Wars and then.
By then they'll be on 10X and they can start over. Right?
And this is not unique to Microsoft. But look at the dopey naming Intel uses for its chips.
Oh, man, their code names are the most confusing code names.
And they've made it worse over time because they've mixed what things are by using the same name.
Different. Oh, that's still eighth generation, but it's eighth generation, second half, eighth.
Like, guys, seriously. Yeah.
So wait, now here's Kent Curry who's listening, and he said, I got the new Credge automatically installed on one of my PCs yesterday.
Really? So it can happen.
I know. And I said via automatic update or Windows update, and he said, I think so.
It can. See, nobody knows really what's going on.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, if that's true, that's the first I've ever heard of that happening.
Me too. I know you can manually seek for the new Credge. I have it. I went and downloaded it. I was living on the edge of Credge.
Right, but that's not the same as getting it through Windows Update.
No, it's not. No. But he said I shut off my PC, and when I turned it back on, it was there.
I'm not trying to make fun of anybody, but I had a reader tell me that he had gotten an older HP NVX2 ARM-based laptop, or it's a 2-in-1, whatever. And he said, you know, I don't know why everyone complains about the new Edge. Like, it runs great on this system and it does this and that. And and then he talked about this feature that's only in the legacy Edge. And I was like, I get bad news for you. I don't think you're running the old Edge. Yeah.
And that listener was me.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I didn't want to embarrass anybody. But what a goon.
You know, if we had different product names like Edge and Credge, that would help too.
Yeah.
Not trying to make fun of anybody, but his name is Leo.
Right, but his email address is. No, we don't want to turn into the register where they always have like stupid names for things. You know?
Oh, God. Yeah.
I know.
The crumpets over in Redmond.
Some of their headlines are pretty funny, though.
It's hysterical. Oh, yeah. It's just bizarre. No,
they always read, like, remember they used to refer to them as the Vole all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can never remember that the chocolate company is Google.
Oh.
Like, why? Because of Willy Wonka, and it's complicated.
But if you have to think about it, it makes it dumb.
It's dumb. But I do love the register. And Ian Thompson, who's a, no, this is a Google update. I got all excited.
You're like, it's Credge. No, it's not.
Actually, it looks like my network adapter on this fine teeny computer is not working. So I'm going to be stuck in 1909 forever, living in the past. That's not so bad. Are they doing 21H1? Am I misreading that?
No, you got it.
21H1. So 20H2 is kind of almost done.
That's right. It is.
Yeah.
As of June, it'll be done.
So 20, that means we're going into the next half of 21. 21H1.
Yep. Starting to hiss the next one, next wave.
Isn't that amazing?
I know.
This has turned into like a therapy session.
I know. Somebody's saying they should call it 21.
We hold hands.
21H1N1.
Yep.
Okay. Is there anything to say? Oh, and what about Windows 10 on ARM? What is there to say about that?
Yeah, what about Windows 10 on ARM? Is that that's not part of 20 this rollout, is it?
Well, I assume they service that version identically to the Intel version. I don't see any reason why.
I didn't see any listing or anything about it today, and somebody just asked me about it. Ed Baker said, "What about?"
I should know the answer. I don't have a current ARM system.
I'm not sure.
But is it possible?
You're right. It should be the same, but.
Yeah, I have a feeling it probably is, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally,
I forgot to mention Cortana.
Yes.
What about it?
So with 2004, Microsoft split Cortana out into a separate application that's going to be serviced independently from the operating system. And today they talked about some of the new features that they're adding to it. So if you've been following along in where they're going with this, they're turning it into more of a productivity aid, right? And so in the coming months, they're going to be adding a lot of new things like instead of just seeing, you know, what's in my emails or who's in my meeting, it's going to start combining something. Like if you say, let me join my next team's meeting, she'll connect you into the team's meeting. So it's turning into more of a doing thing and a productivity thing than it has been just like, give me facts about Mount Kilimanjaro, right? Now it's going to be, how do I link into something like Teams, or how do I use Play My Emails, which already exists on iOS? They're going to be adding some more capabilities to that and bringing it to Android in the coming weeks as well. So if you want to listen to your emails while you're in your car or getting up in the morning and just have it read to you, you can have that now. So there's a lot of new things they're doing to make it more of a true productivity aid, like they said they intended to do, that are going to be available with this new separate app. So I saw someone today say, can I just uninstall it now since it's a separate app? I'm like, yeah, you can, but you might want to see if it'll be more useful to you if you care about that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, I mean, first of all, is Cortana still going to tell jokes? Because that's probably the number one use.
I think it still will do things like give you facts from Bing's and tell me a joke will still work.
I feel like this thing you're describing, which is a Microsoft thing, obviously, is not a thing that needs a name. So, for example,
calling it Cortana is super confusing.
I don't think it makes any sense at all. So if you're the read my emails thing, like you're in the car commuting to work or whatever it is, or these days commuting around the block and coming home again, you're doing that that's an Outlook feature. It's a Outlook mobile. I don't know why you have to pretend it's Cortana. It's just an Outlook mobile feature that uses whatever backend services.
I've said this too. I'm like, now that you've changed what this is completely, I think you need to either drop the name or change the name about like, people have the old version in their head. Yeah.
For example, the Windows 10 stuff, just focus on that. So the standalone app is out of beta. They spent a bunch of time kind of refining it and all this kind of stuff. I mean, just the name Cortana in no way hints at what this thing is to a normal person. And doesn't make any sense.
No,
and I agree. And maybe this should just be considered a Windows 10 feature that is literally just about. Well, I guess they've done it in Windows 10.
App, though, right? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's what it really is a chat-based interface.
Yeah.
You know, on mobile, you typically will speak to engage with this thing, but on Windows 10, it seems like it's a chat thing. And I suppose I don't use it like everyone else, but I suppose there must be a voice way, but it's still chat-based.
There is a voice way. So there's a voice way and a typing way, right? And you could do both or either.
I mean, why even have a name? Why even call it this?
No, I kind of agree with you on this. The other interesting tidbit to me, because I like architectural diagrams and knowing the inner workings of things. So what is powering Cortana now is the same thing that's powering Project Cortex, which is a knowledge management service that they're building, and the universal Microsoft Search. It's that thing called Office 365 Substrate, now called Microsoft 365 Substrate. So if you're thinking, a lot of the things that I just said sound like things that they've talked about with Cortex or things that you can do in other ways, that is not a coincidence. This is all kind of interconnected through the substrate.
I feel like, I've often thought this about personal digital assistants, that they have this key phrase that you use to engage the thing if you're using voice control. Right. So obviously on Windows or whatever that use the Microsoft Assistant, we say, hey, you know, name of, you know, Siri. You know, I always thought it was goofy that we had to use this one word, and there's been a little flexibility depending on which one we're talking about. But I feel like in the Microsoft world, maybe you should just be saying, hey, Microsoft. Whatever, or hey, name of the thing. Like if you know you're using Outlook, hey, Outlook, read me my emails, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Cortana thing is like a goofy thing for people to have to know.
Yeah, it is.
I think.
The wake word. The wake word, as they call it.
The wake word, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm talking to Windows. I mean, maybe I could just say, yeah. Hey, Windows, whatever the things you say to.
It would be kind of cool if it could change depending on where you're at. But then we have people like my mom who don't know if they're in the browser or if they're in Outlook or what they're in. She doesn't know.
I'm just, okay. Yeah. But yeah. Okay. Right.
I know. But I totally agree on the naming. I think the naming is very confusing now that they've completely overhauled and changed what this is.
Well, you can see Cortana, why they gave it a name, because Google has a name and Echo has a name. And
well, actually,
Siri
Google
kind of
doesn't.
Google doesn't.
Google is capable. The one where you actually say the name of the company. Yeah. And you're interacting with Google. And that's why actually it makes more sense today, because Cortana has been recast as a Microsoft 365 thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just Windows.
How about Hey Bing?
So. Well, by the way, Bing.
Talking about tarnished branding, I don't know.
Yeah, that's another one.
X-A-12.
Why don't you just call that Microsoft Search, like it probably was originally? I mean, just, you know, you're dealing with Microsoft. Just use that as the word. It's.
I know. Yeah. I think they got to think of a better way. I'm not sure what the way is, but yeah.
Yeah.
There's got to be a way.
There's got to be a way.
There's got to be a morning after. Okay. So we've plumbed the depths here. There's nowhere else to go but to a leak of source code for Windows NT 3.51. I've been waiting for this all my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's real, right? What? That was a real leak, wasn't it?
Isn't this the Ray Ozzie? No, who worked on this one? No.
This is Dave Cutler.
Dave Cutler, I mean, this guy's really old.
It might actually be 3.5, not 3.51. I might have mistyped that. That's an even less useful version of Windows NT.
Yeah, but I would love to be able to look at the source code. Is it the whole thing?
I've not seen it. I don't know.
It must be millions of lines.
Yeah, probably. Well, I don't know. This is pretty early. You know, despite its name, 3.5 was the second version, right, of Windows NT. 3.1 was the first version. And off the top of my head, I don't remember anymore what the versions were about, but I suspect that this one had something to do with fine-tuning performance, et cetera, and also probably platform support. I think 3.5 and 3.5.1 both had something to do with getting it on MIPS and PowerPC, and I can't remember all the platforms it ran on originally, but a lot of it was that kind of stuff. So it's obviously, it's changed a lot, you know, since those days. But it would be kind of fascinating to figure out how they made this thing run.
Yeah. And then Xbox 2 as well. Is it the original Xbox?
Yeah, the original Xbox, which was based on NT.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So, I wonder where they got this.
Well, everyone's working from home, so they probably just Microsoft's not using VPNs anymore.
Kaspersky antivirus quarantined it and uploaded it.
They used their
AGB
Huawei phone to.
Yeah, there you go.
All in.
So is this like it's not on GitHub? Obviously,
not anymore.
Oh, it was now. Was it really? Oh, that's interesting.
I think so. There has been Microsoft source code leaks that have turned up on GitHub. I don't know if this was one of them or not, but
where would it be now?
You're trying to find it.
Yeah, I want it. Wouldn't you? I mean, look, I'm not trying to build my own Windows NT. I'm not going to do Leo's.
You're a Linux guy.
Leo's Windows.
The Intel version of NT, they didn't want to do this, but they had to. Has a lot of assembly language code in it. I'm sure it's mostly C. The graphic stuff is probably C++ eventually.
It's fascinating. I have the original Unix source code. It came out as a book. It's great. I mean, it's just, you learn a lot reading this stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are there comments?
Maybe Microsoft will release it someday. We never talked about this, but Microsoft in the past week or two released the source code for GW Basic, which was the version of Basic that they wrote. I think it was right before Quick and Q Basic.
Right. It probably still has some Bill Gates in it. A little bit of Bill Gates all over it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure it does. So, I mean, maybe they'll get there eventually.
I love looking at source code, and I think, and I know I'm not alone. I think a lot of developers do. And if you're interested in operating systems, if you're interested in how things are done, it's so old. It's not like it's, you know, hackers are going to go, finally, we have the source code for NT. Some code still in the modern version.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, some of it has carried forward, at least in some capacity. I mean, obviously, they've upgraded or updated the code here and all over the place. I mean, whatever, and added to it. But
right. I think it's really interesting. Is it a – come on, give me a hint. Is it a paste bin?
No, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Is it a big paste bin? All right.
Whereas Weekly, it's –
I'll find it.
Hackers Weekly. Come on.
I'm going to put the NT source code into Linux. Linux needs a Windows kernel.
Ugh, gross.
Oh. No. All right. Let me take a break and do an advertisement. Okay. And then when we return, we can talk about...
When we return, I expect you to have a URL for me to download.
I expect you to have the paste bin available. I want you to airdrop it to me right now, Paul. Okay.
I'll get on this.
Just point your iPhone at me. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. Man, now more than ever, you need ExpressVPN. You see the fight that's going on in Congress right now about whether the FBI should be able to look at anybody's search history without a warrant. Just, you know, hey, we want to just know everything you've ever done on the internet. You might ask yourself, where would they get that information? They go right to your ISP. Your internet service provider knows. Your carrier, your mobile carrier knows because you go through them, you know, with your DNS and with all the traffic goes through them. Sometimes people, I think, want a little more privacy than that. They don't. And we know that internet service providers and often will sell that information to marketers. There's internet service providers that will inject advertisements into your own, you know, websites that you're looking at. Well, that's weird. I got an advertisement for Lower Macungie. What's that doing there? Well, that's why you need a great VPN. Now, I should point out the choice of a VPN is critical because anything the ISP can do, the VPN provider can do. So you want a VPN that believes in privacy. I mean, fundamentally cares about your privacy. You want a VPN provider that protects you by not logging, by not keeping track of what you're doing, so that when they do get that warrantless request from the FBI, they can just go, I got nothing. That's ExpressVPN. And we know it for a couple of reasons. One, they just had an independent third-party audit that said, yep, the privacy policy is accurate. They do no logging. They have this technology at ExpressVPN called Trusted Server. I love this idea. When you log into your, you know, when you set up the VPN, and by the way, one click, Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, just put the app on there, you press a button, Linux too, you're on. The minute you do that, what you're doing is you're spinning up this trusted server in memory only. It's only running in RAM, using it, and then as soon as you log off, disappears from RAM, and it's sandboxed, so at no time can it write to the hard drive. So it's like footprints in the sand. It's like there are no traces left behind. And the third-party audit said, yep, Trusted Server does exactly that. So it's not just, you know, we're not just taking their word for it. That's why I love ExpressVPN. It's why I use it. And thousands of our listeners I know now use it every day to protect your privacy. It also protects your security. I mean, hackers are getting more and more sophisticated. If you're working from home without the, you know, the Cisco umbrella, the help of your IT department to protect you from online threats, ExpressVPN is a very good way to protect yourself online. I really wonder why anybody would, in fact, get online nowadays without a VPN. And that's not just at that coffee shop. We're not going there anymore. It's at home. It's at home, too, because your ISP is a snoop. And even if they're not intentionally snooping on you, they're logging. And the FBI can now go, hey, I'd like to know what Leo's been up to for the last 25 years. ExpressVPN secures your privacy, secures your network, and it gives you a way to visit any country in the world. They're in over 90 countries, so you can easily go to England and use the Netflix there and watch Doctor Who episodes, go to Japan, watch anime. I can think of a dozen reasons. Now,
It's not free. It shouldn't be free. No VPN should be free. If it's free, they're paying for it somehow, almost certainly with your data. So you got to pay for a VPN. But it's very reasonable, less than $7 a month when you use our special offer. Go to expressvpn.com/windows and sign up for a year. They give you an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/windows. Now more than ever, you need a VPN. And I know one of the questions I get all the time is, well, which one? Because it's kind of confusing. There's one I trust. There's one I've looked into. Third parties have looked into. There's one that really works. It's fast, it's easy, and it's really private and secure. It's expressvpn.com/windows. If you're not running it, you crazy. expressvpn.com/windows. Paul.
Quick update on Windows NT source code. I believe I'm downloading it now.
How exciting. Airdrop it to me after you get it.
Also, you had mentioned that.
Can you Google it?
Did
you just, can you Bing it? Did you just Bing it? Is that how you got it?
I did, but.
Don't tell me anymore.
I found it via a link on Reddit. I will tell you that much.
Okay. That's all I need to know. I know how to use Reddit.
Yep. So the number of lines of code in Windows NT 3.5 was 9 million.
Yikes.
Wow.
Up from 6 Yikes. Million in 3.1. By the time it went to 16 million in NT 4.0.
What is it
18
now?
18 million. There's 2000. Last one I see here was Windows 7 was 50 million lines of code.
Oh, man. Really? It's wow. It's really
See, this is great stuff. This is not piracy. This is not like I'm going to compile this and now I get a free version of Windows NT 3.5. Nobody wants that. That's not what this is for. This is educational. This is awesome. They should put it in Minecraft.
Go to WinWorld and download the ISO and install it on virtual machine or whatever.
That's exciting. That's really cool. Yeah. Wow. It's amazing how little code there is in that. What is it? 5 million? What did you say? How many lines?
9 million.
9 million.
For that version. Yeah.
Compared to 50 million?
Windows 3.5 must have come out in 19. I could just look it up.
That was the first really good Windows, I think. 3.5, right?
3.5.1 was, yeah.
3.5.1,
1994. 96 was the first. It was NT 4.0. That's the first one I ran. And it was great for developers because you couldn't crash it as easily as 9X, 9.5, 95.
So this is, a 36-year-old version of Windows. No, 26-year-old version of Windows. I mean.
Yeah.
Sure.
Somebody's saying, tell the Steve Ballmer story about the number of lines of code. I don't know that story. Do you guys know that?
No.
Well, Rodney, you're going to have to tell us in chat.
This sounds familiar. I wonder if this came out of Showstoppers.
By the way.
Yeah, maybe.
Is this the thing? Well, I do remember that one of the arguments that Microsoft got into with IBM was that IBM measured success by lines of code.
Oh, per day, yeah.
And Microsoft used to tell them that, no, you want to reduce the lines of code.
Right.
That's more efficient.
Right.
And IBM actually had an acronym for this. I think there was a payment system based on the number of lines of code they delivered or something like that.
Yeah. No, and I've heard that conversation, and that really is, you should not measure programmer productivity by lines of code.
But that's definitely part of Microsoft's history, that argument with IBM.
Good, yeah.
Over lines of code. I don't know if that's what he means.
This is cool. I don't know if it's true, but Zorro in our chat room says, I worked on Dave Cutler's PDP 11 system, and it came with Source. He was a prolific assembly language coder, as one must be.
Yeah, they wanted NT. NT is being sort of a successor to VMS as well, right? They wanted it to be platform independent and portable was the big term. Not open, but portable.
Portable.
Right. Meaning it could run on multiple hardware platforms. And, of course, I think the original release, I believe, was Intel only, the very first release, at least at first. But, of course, over time, they supported 4 or 5, I can't remember exactly, and then Itanium. And then they kind of gave up on that for a while until they went back with Windows RT to ARM, which they still support in a different version. But they've kind of gone back to their semi-portable roots. But, there's all kinds of assembly language and Intel optimizations in there. It's all, it must be
someday
all
it'll all be reunion code.
Reunion?
It'll all be.
We're going to get there. We have a reunion discussion coming.
Oh, good. But first,
Edge, now correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Chrome even has this feature yet.
No, it does.
It does. Okay.
Yeah, so if you start up a new computer, go download Chrome, log into your Google account, and you let it sit for a couple seconds, you'll see the new tabs start appearing with the, you know, we installed this extension. You might have to sign into the service or whatever it is, but that is there. So that, and that has finally arrived on the new Edge, right? So when they supposedly finished this thing or took it out of preview back in, was that January? Was it really that long ago? January? This was one of the big missing features. They're still missing some sync features. History sync is not available yet. That's coming this summer. And open tab sync. So in other words, you could, from within the menu system, see the tabs that are open on another device and get to it from there, which is useful for sure. Mm-hmm. Is not available yet, but those are coming.
So I have mixed feelings about this because sometimes I don't want all the extensions on every system.
Yeah.
I guess you can uncheck that box probably, right?
Yep. Yeah. You can turn it off. Okay. The problem for me is because I use a lot of different computers and I have to manually install extensions every time.
It's much easier to do it this way. Yeah.
Awful.
I agree.
But the problem is when this feature became available, I started getting duplicate extensions.
Oh, and yeah, that's not good.
It's tied to the fact, I believe, that over time I've downloaded and installed extensions from both Chrome and from Microsoft.
Oh.
And over time, I don't really go to the Chrome Web Store anymore to get extensions, except for the one or two that just aren't available from Microsoft. So I think it's hard to tell, you know, just looking at it. But I believe what's happened is on systems where I originally installed Grammarly from the Chrome Web Store on one computer.
Right.
Later installed it from the Edge Web Store. But now that I'm on the version that has the Chrome version, they don't think I have it yet. So they.
Right.
Now it's syncing. Yeah. Yeah. So most people won't have to worry about that.
And history sync too. That's interesting.
Coming.
It's coming. Yeah.
Yeah. Still coming. Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't care that much about history sync. I care way more about extensions.
Yeah. I agree. And open tab sync is kind of interesting too. Apple does a little bit of this. Yeah. So if I have a Safari tab open on my iPhone, when I sit down on my Mac, it shows up as like a shadow tab, like it's in the it's an extra.
Right.
Like if you want to ignite it, you can.
I think the way Chrome does it and the way Edge will do it is probably through the I don't have it to even look at, but I'm sure if you go into it's probably under history or something and it will say tabs open on other browsers or something like that. It's useful. It's nice to be able to get to it.
I can't wait for vertical tabs. I'm like dying to try that out.
Oh, we had a big conversation about that yesterday with Steve Gibson. He says once you go vertical tabs, you never go back.
I know. Wow. I think I would love it. I do.
But he has, he says,
I always have a million tabs.
Yeah, he has 100 tabs. I said, wait a minute. How do you see him on the, he says, well, you scroll. You can actually scroll.
That makes sense. And it's more natural to scroll vertically, for sure. You could. I'm sure there's some way to scroll a tab bar horizontally, but nobody ever, nobody does that.
No. It's ugly. Okay. Let's look at looking back on last week's exciting adventure known as Bill's.
Yeah. So remember last week when we talked about this, I had mentioned that one of the issues with Build was that there was so much information. It was kind of hard. Yeah. We had a pretty nice rundown of the stuff that we were paying attention to and watched or whatever, but there was a lot more of it. And I spent a ton of time since last week's show watching sessions. And you can see the whole session list if you go to mybuild.microsoft.com. You can see all the sessions. Most of them have videos you can go back and watch later on. And I did that new tab thing where it's like, okay, yep. And that's Mary Jo when I sent you that photo of Mark Rozenovich over the weekend with the gong. Yeah. That's when I saw that. So there's a lot of new information, at least for me, because I didn't catch all of it from the first rundown. And one of the things that, and I think this came up, it might have been a listener question or something, but someone had asked about .NET MAUI, and I sort of said off the top of my head, it sounds like this is the future of Xamarin Forms. They're not being coy about that. It's the future of Xamarin Forms. But it's interesting because Xamarin Forms today targets Android and iOS. And technically, it targets Windows, too, because it's the old Windows Mobile thing. So, but the Xamarin Forms is a subset of what you can do with UWP. So no one would ever write a Xamarin Forums app for Windows today. It just doesn't make any sense. But in the future, I guess it will. So they're going to target Windows and Mac OS in addition to Android and iOS. But we're not going to be able to really play with this in any decent capacity until possibly next year. And it's not shipping until the end of next year. So that one is still kind of a ways out. But that triggered me thinking, you know, I was really complimentary and happy about this Project Reunion thing, right? It provides developers with a way forward, regardless of what they're using. So if you're on a Win32 platform, if you're using frameworks like WinForms or WPF or whatever, or you're using UWP, this is like the next version of both of those things together as one thing. And I that's laudable. But, you know, you think about, like, we joke about this, but seriously, it's amazing how Microsoft has embraced open standards and open source all over the company. And even in Windows itself, there's a Linux subsystem built in there for developers, but, you know, there's a Linux feature. But it seems like Windows app development is the one place where they're still talking about proprietary stuff, right? And they're still talking about, like, a crazy number of choices for making apps. And I don't understand why they don't just say, look, yeah, we're going to keep supporting everything you do. It's fine. Like, we'll rev it and we'll move it forward and all that. But I wish they had, like, an app vision that was open and cross-platform, right? And maybe Xamarin Forums will do that. And they have things like, I don't know if you paid attention to Blazor WebAssembly, which is a way to use C# and what is basically the next version of ASP.NET to write Windows apps as well, right? Kind of built on top of open standards, I guess. But I feel like this is the time to kind of, I don't know. I feel like they should be embracing web apps and saying, like, this is the future. Mm. You know,
we've said that about PWAs for years, right? Like, I feel like we've had this convo for like 3 years.
In other words, like, as a developer, you wake up one morning, you're like, oh my God, I have this great idea for an app. I'm going to make it only for Windows. Like, who would ever? I mean, I'm not saying that never happens, but I mean, 99% of the time, what you want is your app to be available to everybody. And the web is one way to do it. And cross-platform frameworks like Flutter or possibly this .NET MAUI thing that can target multiple framework multiple platforms is another way to do it.
Yeah.
But
I feel like the reason they just hang on to supporting Win32 and UWP is that's where their developer base is.
Yes.
You know, and that's where their apps are.
Yes. Right. So actually, I'm happy to say that the one thing I think I got right about Project Reunion right up front was that where this makes the most sense is for people who have existing apps and they want to modernize them. Because the one really good thing about UWP is that user experience layer, the user interface layer. And that's what WinUI is. And that's what you get by going to Project Reunion. And it's true whether if you could be writing a C++ app, which is nuts, but you could be using that. You could be using, like I said, WinForms, WPF, whatever. You can modernize your app. And that's great, but that's not the future, right? I mean, like, if you're going to like if you want to make a new app, you want it to run everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you're pretty much looking, it's the web, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, no one's going to I mean, I don't know of anybody who's even thinking about, I'm going to write a new app. Let me make it 132, right?
Yeah, that's, I know. Or, are you a sadist? Like, what is, you know?
You know, this is almost, here's my parallel when you're talking about this in my mind. Azure has a very similar situation, right? If you have an existing workload, you're probably going to use infrastructure as a service to bring it to Azure. Like, you're going to lift and shift it and put it in the cloud. You're not going to try to rebuild it. Like, if you're building a new app, you think more about platform as a service, right? So they have the way for people who are legacy and then the way forward. And I feel like in apps, this is what they're kind of doing, a similar dichotomy, right? Way in the past is 132 UWP. Way forward might be MAUI or PWA and or PWA.
Yeah.
Maybe.
This is only semi-related because it's not really a developer topic, but and you probably knew this or know this. I also watched a Windows Virtual Desktop thing or something that had this is part of it. And I didn't know this. Like, I haven't really paid much attention to Windows Virtual Desktop, because when I hear this, I think to myself, geez, like, you're spinning up like a Windows 10 session on an Azure server somewhere, and you're looking at a desktop, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're on an iPad or a Mac or something, that's perfectly viable. But actually, it's more than that. If you if you're an old school person like I am, and you go back in time and remember things like MDOP, which was the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, they had actually I think they had a total of three different virtualization solutions, but one of them was called Microsoft Enterprise Virtualization or Desktop Virtualization, MedV, right?
Yeah,
MedV. That was the whole you got your desktop in a window and you ran your apps inside of it. But they also had this other thing called AppV, which was application virtualization. And the idea there was that you were running virtualized app instances. So you had your own desktop computer or whatever, laptop. And in your start menu, you could have apps that were installed locally, but you could also have like what was basically a virtual streaming session to an app that was on at that time was in your data center. But today, Windows Virtual Desktop actually does both of those things. So if you want to run a full desktop because you're on a different platform, you can do that. But if you just want to run virtual app instances, it does that too. And that's kind of amazing. And the reason this is related is because this is another way you can move forward. So if you have a system like Windows 10X in the future, and maybe this Win32 container thing isn't working out so great, you as an organization could say, okay, look, we have this one app that it's a legacy app. It was built in WinForms or whatever it was. You can deliver it virtually through this thing. And depending on which Microsoft 365 subscription type you have, you could be getting this for free. This comes with, I don't know if it's E3, E5, whatever it is, but you basically get this capability for nothing. So that's kind of an interesting way, because I feel like Microsoft, the problem with these guys is they never drop anything. they just drag everything around. You know, they'll never say goodbye to anything.
They get business users who are like, if you get rid of this, I'm going somewhere else.
we rely on this Visual Basic 6 app that was written 20 years ago. And God help you if you try to get rid of, you know, support for that.
Exactly. Yep.
So anyway,
it's
maybe
a blessing and a curse.
Yes, right. It is. Yep. It's literally a double-edged sword.
Yep.
Anyhow, I feel like I had a second build over the weekend, you know, because I watched as many sessions again as I had done, you know, kind of up front.
I haven't watched the WVD session, but I think that, I don't know how many there were.
It wasn't a session about that. Of another. Yeah, it wasn't a full session.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Sorry. Because
I was curious if they talked in anything they said about WVD, about MSIX App Attach, which is this technology that is now available to people who are in FastRing to test. And I think you have to be an enterprise developer and FastRing or some combination like that. But this is also going to be connected to how they enhance performance of virtualized apps using containers. And I want to write more about that. You guys had a really good story about it on Petri, I saw, where they talked about MSIX App Attach. I think it was Russell Smith who wrote it. And this is something that's really key to basically making WVD work with all types of apps in a really sound and thorough way. Because, you know, there are some apps it doesn't work as well with. And they're trying to fix the way the container technology works, basically.
Which is, I'm sure, the same problem they're running into with the Win32 container. I remember testing AppV back in the day. And at that time, literally, it's kind of like what apps are PWA saying? You're like, Twitter?
I know.
Hulu, there's actually a bunch, but I mean, you know, like, you kind of run out of examples.
Pinterest, your favorite app?
Yeah. Pinterest. But like back in the day, it was always like, well, Microsoft Office and Adobe Reader. It was like, but if I want to virtualize any, you know, it was hard to do other apps, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Anyway, maybe that should have been my pick my tip this week. I'll just throw that out. If you haven't done it, again, go to the build website, go to the session list. You can go down the list. You can filter it by topics, whatever. And, you know, you can download the videos if you want to watch them offline.
I think they're on YouTube also, right? All the same videos are on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the build website's nice for it because it's kind of organized nice and you can filter everything.
True. Yep.
Also, I should say, we didn't give them credit for this. I'm sorry, sorry to interrupt.
Yes, yes.
In addition to having like live captioning, which they had, they had
sign language. I saw that.
There was a little icon of the two hands. I showed my son. My son's, you know, deaf and he knows sign language. He was blown away by this. And they puts a little picture in picture thing.
Is that preferable to captioning?
I should ask him which he prefers. I think I know in my son's case, because my son has hearing through cochlear implants and reads lips. You know, he uses a combination of inputs to process everything that's being said, depending on the scenario. So I'd have to ask him which it maybe it varies by person. I'm not really sure.
Might also vary by content, because I know when they're using ASL to show Governor Cuomo, for instance, they get very animated.
Yeah.
And
So
I think that's more communicative than just a caption would be.
I will say this is something you guys have probably noticed. Like, there are automatic captioning services on different, you know, video types. So like YouTube has a version of this. Microsoft does this. It does this, and I think in Skype and Teams, whatever. That technology has gotten amazingly accurate. And so I wanted there's an amazing video that ex-NASA guy that did the glitter bomb thing. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
He does a squirrel.
Is that the same guy, the Ninja Warrior obstacle course for squirrels? It's the same guy, Glitterbomb guy.
It is amazing. You have to watch. Anyway, I wanted my son to watch this.
Yeah.
But it was on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, man, it's
The captions are awful.
Captioning. Yeah. Thinking, oh, this is going to be terrible. It was awesome.
Oh, they've gotten better then.
Yeah, it's way better than it used to be.
It used to be really awful.
Yep. Yeah, but they were so bad, he would just turn them off. And, like, the captioning on this particular video was very good.
Yeah, well, Google's dictation has gotten much, much, much better. So it's probably dependent on the quality of the audio, too. I mean,
that's true. And this guy does speak very clearly.
He speaks clearly. Yep. But captioning's fine, but I don't know. Now, the ideal would be if the speaker on the video was ASLing while they're doing the video, because then you'd really be seeing that person talk or sign in this case. In fact, Apple, we were just talking about this yesterday, because Apple has done some, they had these Today at Apple wonderful events at the Apple Store, which they can't do. So they've been putting them online, and they just did one I think it was about Apple Clips. And the presenter, Gus, signed the whole thing, which I just thought was fantastic. I just thought that was cool. Because now you're watching the person, you know, who's presenting. Yeah. But that's not what you would be getting with Build. You'd be getting, you know.
My son will be downstairs in 1 minute.
Yeah, ask him. I'm curious.
Tell us.
Yeah, we don't know. Right. So he hears somewhat with the cochlear implants?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really amazing. When did he get those?
Yeah, he's done really well. Well, he got one when he was 1 year old, 1 year old, 18 months old. And then the second one, today they would just do two immediately. But he got the second one probably 10 or 11.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah,
we talked a little bit about that, but I didn't know that he had cochlear implants.
Yeah.
Why is Microsoft? Oh no, you already said that. Let's talk about peanut butter cups instead.
Yeah,
this is clearly a Mary Jo Foley story.
It is, but the headline was not mine about peanut butter cups.
Really, Paul did that.
Wow. You got my chocolate and your peanut butter.
Oh, I get it. I get it.
I like that I can still surprise you.
Yeah, so this also is a Build announcement, this first one. That they didn't spend a lot of time on it, Build, but I think it's interesting because Microsoft has a ton of different operating systems for embedded and small devices now. And I don't know if you remember, maybe like 3-4 years ago, they had so many different flavors of Windows 10 for IoT devices. They were all different kinds of variants of Windows 10 for IoT. Now they're down to two, which is Windows 10 IoT Core for really small devices and Windows 10 IoT Enterprise for bigger devices where you want the full manageability of Windows 10 and be able to use it in conjunction with your existing tools and all. So what they're going to do now is bring this down to one. You know, we always talk about how Microsoft has too many solutions for any one problem. In the IoT space, they're actually going to fix this, and they're going to have one, the combined product is going to be called IoT Enterprise, just like we have now Windows 10 IoT Enterprise. It's going to be out in 2021, so next year. And they're making a lot of changes to it. So they're taking Windows 10 Core, Windows 10 Enterprise, smushing them together, but at the same time, reducing the footprint by 40%. And they're going to enable over-the-air updates for it. It's also going to be able to run Linux workloads in containers through Azure IoT Edge on Windows. So there's a whole bunch of different things coming up for this product family in the next year, and they're going to be testing it over the next few months. So if you're a customer of IoT Core and IoT Enterprise, you probably want to keep an eye on that. I had a couple of people ask me, what about Azure RTOS, real-time operating system? Is this going to replace that? No. So they are going to keep Azure RTOS, which is based on this technology they bought in 2019 from Express Logic that was called ThreadX, a very well-known real-time operating system. They're going to continue to enhance that and make that available for a class of devices where you want a true real-time operating system, like things like microcontrollers and really highly constrained devices. So that line also will continue. But I'm really happy to see us going down to one Windows 10 IoT product after having had so many of them and trying to keep track of so many of them over the years. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Nice. And on that note, you got your Skype in my Teams. Is this you?
We know Skype features or Skype integration is coming to Teams. Yeah. We know that consumer features are coming into Teams. Yeah. Everybody kind of assumes that eventually Teams will just replace Skype. And so VentureBeat asked Jeff Tepper, how or when that was going to happen. Actually, my son's here. Hold on 1 second. So say hi to everybody.
Hey, he's a redhead. I didn't know he had such red hair. That's
he's
cool.
He's also got his Microsoft To-Do shirt on.
Love it. Love it. Nice. He's a wunderkind.
All right. So this was the question. We were talking about how in the Microsoft Build videos, they had that person doing sign language as an option. Right. But they also had automatic captioning.
Like the ASR, right?
Yeah. So do you prefer one or the other? Is having both preferable? Like what's the...
I mean, personally, I think I would prefer to have both of them because I'm not fully fluent in sign language. So kind of seeing the correlation between the sign language and the captioning would help understanding the sign language.
Yeah.
And also like I kind of grew up using captioning. So I generally prefer captioning like in a general sense.
So some of your friends who are fully deaf, I mean, do you know what their preference is for sign language or?
I feel like their preference would mostly be sign language.
Yeah.
But I could see them saying that having the captioning would be nice because there's not, when you have sign language, it's not a literal translation.
Right.
So like what they're saying is like not exactly what they're going to be signing. So seeing both.
It kind of fills in the details if you're.
Yeah, exactly. So like, sometimes like details will get left out.
Okay.
So seeing the captioning, I don't know.
So you think having both is preferable?
Yes, providing the most amount of flexibility.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Thank you. Sorry.
That's very cool. Thank you. Yeah. Very interesting. That makes sense. Actually, it's kind of
It does. Yeah.
And then we were going to talk about.
So Jeff Tepper was interviewed by VentureBeat, and they said, "You know, guy's going to get rid of Skype," and he was like, "Yes, no, yes, no, no." Maybe. It's really funny because it was like a caveat to everything. And I think that the takeaway is they're going to support Skype for as long as people are using Skype and want to use Skype. It's very clear that over time what they're going to do is start messaging inside of Skype. Hey, we got this other thing called Teams. You should use this instead. And maybe eventually you'll upgrade Skype one day and just get Teams. You know, he doesn't say that, but I mean, you kind of get that feeling like, oh no, you know, we're going to keep investing. We never stopped investing in Skype. And it's like, really? Cause, I've been using Skype for a long time. I don't know if that's true, but anyway, you know, they obviously can't, they're not going to say, look, Skype is dead. It's a dead brand. It's terrible.
No, and I think as long as they can get revenues from or sell ads on two products or get revenues through two streams, why not? Right?
Yeah. You know what I find interesting? Jeffrey Fowler at the Washington Post, because everybody's using Zoom and all these other products, he and his colleague did a test of the quality
I guess audio plus video of all of the tools, and Skype came out on top, which is not a surprise to me.
Did it really?
That's what we use. Yeah. But I would hope Microsoft wouldn't just throw out Skype, because it's a great. It actually, I mean, that's why we use it. We have been using it for years.
There's a lot of. I don't understand the back end stuff, but Brad was telling me that there's still stuff you can do with Skype with regards to video and splitting video and all the stuff that is not possible yet in Teams. Yeah. But I've used this example before, you know, the Windows 2000 thing, when they changed that brand, that startup screens had Windows 2000 powered by NT technology, you know, someday I suspect we're going to see a Microsoft Teams powered by Skype technology.
Me too. Same. Yeah. I think they're on the same backbone now. Like the back end backbone, I think, is the same between the two.
Okay.
It's a very different experience.
I think they understand that a lot of broadcasts use Skype.
CNN uses it.
A lot of people use Skype. Although I noticed Cisco WebEx branding on a lot of stuff now. I think Cisco has been hustling around with a bag of cash saying, you know, it would be nice
if
you used a little WebEx.
Skype, Microsoft made the same mistakes, some of the same mistakes with Skype that they did with Windows Phone, which is they just lost time. You know, they were on a kind of a P2P backbone, and they spent years getting it off that. And then they're like, oh, but now we have to, all these messaging apps that come up, we got to have cute things in there like they do. And then everyone who used Skype hated that. And it's like, oh, we got to go back. And they just lost so much time screwing around with it. And they had this great brand, and it was the Kleenex.
It was.
Of, you know, web calling.
That's right.
And they really, they've lost that, you know, and it's
well, Cortana, similar situation, right? They're kind of ahead at one point.
That's true.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, they know a lot of broadcast uses it. Maybe they'd keep it around just for broadcast. We have some fancy, very expensive boxes, Skype VX boxes from Newtek.
Right, right.
And, you know, that would just, I presume they're not going to obsolete those. I would hope not, anyway.
You're not on Skype TX, right? You're on the regular Skype.
No, but we will be on TX eventually. We have we have an issue with the way we do audio was incompatible. I don't know. I don't know even if they've fixed it. I think everything was a little bit on hold now because engineers aren't coming in. But eventually we hope to be on TX. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do some Xbox news. I've been waiting. Microsoft Dungeons is here. It's here. I can't. It was between that and HBO Max, and I decided at Microsoft Dungeons.
Minecraft Dungeons.
I mean, Minecraft and Microsoft, aren't those interchangeable now?
No, Minecraft Microsoft Dungeon is where products like Windows Media Player, Zoom,
yes.
Or, you know, it's where they have this chain to work all somewhere.
Dungeons, yes. It's a dungeon crawler Dungeons. With Minecraft. How cool is that?
Yeah. And it's like kind of a little hack and slash game, like kind of an action, you know, battle game. This is, honestly, for someone like me, my whole issue with Minecraft is that it's like a little too serene. You know, I mean, I realize, you know, zombies attack you and stuff
It's but pretty serene. No, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's no Call of Duty. Let me.
Well, a Call of Duty set in the Minecraft universe would be kind of interesting. I'm not against it.
Well, Dungeons kind of is. I mean, this could be the beginning of that, couldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is neat because it's available across multiple platforms. And I don't have it right in front of me, but it should be Xbox One, Windows PC. It's PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch. If you're on Xbox Game Pass, you're getting it. So you can get that across whatever platforms. If you have Ultimate, you can get it across both of them. It is relatively inexpensive. If you want to just buy it, the standard version is $19.99. And then there's a Hero Edition for $10 more that gets you. The big thing is two featured downloadable content DLC packs. But you also get a Hero Cape.
That's all I care about. Give me my cape.
And two player skins. And this is where I wonder what went wrong with my career. But anyway.
And then so that's cool. 200 million people paid $10 each. And that's how you get to $2 billion, kids.
Mm-hmm.
That easy.
Don't knock it. It's going to be June next week. I think on Monday. And that means we're going to have another month of games with gold. If you're an Xbox Xbox Live Gold subscriber or an Xbox Game Pass subscriber, you'll get access to these new games. I've heard, so Destroy All Humans is the only one I've heard of. That's an Xbox, that's actually an original Xbox game. So that one goes back quite a ways. But as far as the original Xbox One games, I've never heard of either of these.
Coffee Talk?
Shantae and the Pirate's Curse. Shantae. And Coffee Talk, which literally, I believe, you play a barista. Barista, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Well, you know, we don't get out much these days, Leo, no, so maybe that game would be of interest to people. Yeah. It's kind of hard to say.
Lend an ear to your customers as you serve up hot drinks behind a bar. As a barista owner in this soothing and relaxing game, immerse yourselves in the story of the city's fantasy inhabitants, where progression is based on the variety of beverages you serve. You will get, Jesus, this sounds awful.
They should market it like... Are you depressed by all the action and violence in Minecraft dungeons?
Games too exciting for you? Now, destroy all humans, you get to be an alien as part of the Cryptosporidium 137 Armada, and you take over the Earth. Fire ray guns, throw cows, or even disguise. That sounds like fun. Disguise yourself as a puny human as you take one giant step on mankind.
Right.
I might play that. That looks like fun. Is it 8-bit?
It should be, actually.
It's pretty old, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
All right. So 30 years ago this week, Windows 3.0 came out. And it was the first version of Windows to include Microsoft Solitaire. And I believe because that happened on that day... There's a like a worldwide or national like Solitaire Day because, you know, we celebrate everything and it's whatever. This game is still available in Windows today. The version of Windows 10 looks like a Las Vegas casino where it's got like things booping and bopping and it's kind of stupid. But but you do have at least have access to multiple versions of the game. But they said it's still one of the most played games on the planet.
What?
And it's still 100 million hands of solitaire are played daily around the globe every day.
Wow.
Wow. Really? My mom plays at least half of them.
That explains why nobody's using virtual desktops. They're just busy playing solitaire.
That's right.
Crazy.
I love it.
And finally, this one, I thought this was kind of cool because Sony, like Microsoft had done earlier, released their financial report for the most recent quarter, and they talked about some big numbers for PlayStation. Obviously, PlayStation 4 is one of their biggest console generations ever. It's going to be the second most successful version of PlayStation they've ever done. But they have a streaming video game service called PlayStation Now that has 2.2 million subscribers. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting because Microsoft just for the first time announced how many people are subscribed to Xbox Game Pass, which, by the way, is not a streaming service. You have to download the games. But there are far more people. I mean, I'm trying to find the exact.
You're muted. You're muted, Paul. Pauly. Hello, Pauly. Earth to Pauly. I can't.
Sorry.
You just got him.
Sorry. I must have hit the space bar and the little preview window was open and it muted it. Sorry. There are 2.2 million people subscribed to PlayStation Now, which only works on the world's most popular video game console and on Windows. Xbox Game Pass, 10 million subscribers.
Wow.
It's like Microsoft is losing everywhere in video games, but at this one specific place, and I know they're not 100% the same thing, but they do compete with each other, guys. Come on. I mean, each company went to market in a slightly different way, whatever, but both of them offer current gen and previous gen games. A library of X number, whatever, the 100 something, and there's actually a lot more of them on Sony. They compete, and Microsoft is like killing them, and I don't know why, but you know, great.
That's amazing.
There you go.
All right, I think we can do the back of the book. So let's keep up the good work, Paul Thurrott, starting with your tip of the week.
Yeah, somebody today on Twitter said asked about, I think they were asking about History Sync, actually, and they said, why don't these guys have a roadmap? I'm like, actually, they do have a roadmap. So I looked it up, and they maintain, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Microsoft has those URL shorteners, or a URL
AKA
shortener.
AKA.ms, yeah.
Yeah, which is actually pretty cool, right? Plus, it's really short, obviously. So they have an AKA.ms URL for the latest version of the Microsoft Edge roadmap. So the where it goes to will change over time because they actually have different support documents they use for this. But It's MS Edge Top Feedback. So aka.ms/MS Edge Top Feedback will always bring you to the latest version of the Microsoft Edge roadmap. And that's where I learned that HistorySync is coming this summer. That's where it is on the roadmap.
Well.
Yeah, so if you want to keep up to date on this, if you like Microsoft Edge and you're curious, not just on when things will land, but whether they're even considering it, right? Because they get a lot of feedback from users. It goes into the list, and it's, you know, some of the stuff it's like, yeah, we'll see. And some of it's, you know, actively investigating or actively developing. And eventually you'll get dates, you know, and it's actually kind of an interesting thing to look at. If you're into Microsoft Edge, which you should be.
Yes, we are very interested.
Yes.
Does the roadmap have like a magic marker on the road you're supposed to take? And like, does it have points of interest on it and stuff?
Well, in
like
the beginning
that?
It says you're standing in front of a mailbox.
Plug. Wow. I wonder how closely they adhere to this. I noticed that it's all discussion after a while.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course. But that's, yeah. This is pretty transparent. You know, this is pretty good.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah. I like it. I like it that they published that. That's cool. And your app pick of the week.
So last week, as part of Build 2020, Microsoft announced a new Windows Package Manager. This is, I think, and we talked about this last week, is the beginnings of the other half of their strategy for moving past the UWP/store stuff, right? So we know that Project Reunion is, you know, how we get past UWP. But how do we get past the Windows Store? Because the Microsoft Store, this has not worked out, obviously. There's a back-end thing that has to happen where you can trust that apps that you get from some other place other than the store have all of those promises that you get when you download from the store. And they haven't completely worked this out, but I think we kind of agreed that it's most likely that the Microsoft Store in the future becomes a graphical front end to the same back-end service that Microsoft is using for the new package manager, right? That you're going to have the same set of apps in both places. And then we speculated, and I will now admit that I knew this was already coming, that people would very quickly create their own GUIs for the system today. And Mehdi, who writes for Throughout.com, had one. I think he had it ready to go by the end of last week. It was pretty damn impressive, actually. So he, like a lot of developers, you hear that they're doing this thing, and you're like, oh, we should make a GUI to this. And the one that he made is called WinInstall.app. I guess it's WinInstall.app. So if you go to that URL in your browser, you can see it. He does a really nice job with the UX stuff. And it's basically it's again like a 9X type thing where you're selecting the apps you want. And what this will do is generate the script that you will run to batch install all of the apps that you've chosen. Now, it has some limitations because, frankly, the Microsoft system has some limitations. But it's kind of amazing to me that he was able to pull something like this together so quickly.
That's so cool. He's a good coder. I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really is.
Look at that.
I don't know if I mentioned this. I should have, but he is interning at Qualcomm this summer.
Oh, really?
Mm. Oh, nice. Yep.
You guys don't pay him enough to keep him, huh?
Yeah, well, he's still in college. So, I mean, he's still.
Oh, he's in college.
He's from England. So he's going to university, but.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
I love it that the very first app you can install is his own, which is Tweetin'. Yeah. This is great. Now, this is kind of like Nynight, except that it gives you a command line, and it's a really long list. This isn't everything in the App Store.
No. But I believe it's everything that is available currently through the package manager.
That's awesome.
But again, I think those two lists of apps eventually are going to intersect.
Wow.
You know, they're going to become the same thing.
And then you generate a script, and you can either download it as a batch file, mm-hmm. or you can just put it in PowerShell or just put it in the terminal, and it'll run. Because Winget is the Microsoft app, so it just runs Winget. Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Mehdi. That's really great.
Impressive.
Yep.
I wrote a Notepad app, Leo. So how come we don't talk about that?
Oh, yeah, we don't talk about that enough. Especially how Microsoft stole your Zoom feature.
Exactly.
Thank you. Shocking.
Glad someone else noticed that. Shocking.
And now the Enterprise Pick of the Week with Mary Jo Foley.
Yep. This is another thing that was one of the many build announcements that we didn't get through last week. But Microsoft announced this thing called the Microsoft Cloud for Healthcare. And it's interesting for a couple of different reasons. One is it's not surprising the first of the multiple vertical cloud solutions that they're going to make. They said they didn't say how many and when, but this is a new strategy, just like how Office on the desktop has a vertical push or is going to be getting more of a vertical push. Office on the cloud, same thing. So first one is for healthcare, given what's going on in the world. This makes a lot of sense. And what they are combining into a single bundle is Microsoft Cloud Services. So that means Azure, Microsoft 365 / Office 365 and Dynamics 365. And then they combine that with an industry-specific model, data model, cross-cloud connectors, workflows, APIs, and the health, Cloud for Healthcare will use a common data model for sharing across apps. So that what they're trying to do is basically connect all the different pieces of healthcare technology that is out there in the cloud and create a single kind of repository for where hospitals, pharmacies, doctors could all use this Microsoft Industry Cloud for Healthcare and have things actually work together in the healthcare space. And, you know, a lot of people have tried to tackle this, and there are a lot of other companies who've tried to do this, and no one's been successful to date. But it'll be interesting to see how much uptake there is on this, given how many Microsoft customers in the healthcare space there are right now, and how many are moving to Azure. So I wouldn't be surprised over time to see them do something like this for like transportation and finance and some of their other big verticals, retail, entertainment. But the first one is healthcare, and they announced it at Build, and they're starting to put all the pieces into place in the coming months, as they like to say.
Hmm. Nice. Very cool. And it makes sense they do that now, right?
Right.
Number two, enterprise pick of the week.
Yeah, Microsoft in the past few weeks has been buying companies, and they haven't gotten a ton of coverage for this because I think so many other things have been going on. But it's kind of interesting to look at where Microsoft is spending its money. And the first company they bought earlier this month, I believe. No, yeah, earlier this month is called Metaswitch Networks. Metaswitch Networks is based in Los Altos. They are yet another company that Microsoft's buying in the 5G space, which is kind of interesting because Microsoft has this view that over time, mobile operators and carriers who are working with 5G are going to be using the cloud more and more to develop new apps and to connect customers all the way to the last mile. So this company, Metaswitch, we don't know how much they paid for them, but they currently provide software and services for public, private, and hybrid clouds. And their customers are mobile and converged operators and data communication service companies. So if you look at it, people ask, is Microsoft going to become a 5G provider in and of itself? I don't think so. I think instead what they want to do is partner with a lot of companies who are in the 5G space, and they're already doing this with AT&T, for example, just to make sure that as these mobile operators and carriers move more to developing cloud-native apps, that they'll have a good foothold in that space. And then just last week, they bought another company that's not in the 5G space, but that's in the process automation space. So if you know what Microsoft's doing with Power Apps and Power BI and Power Automate, the thing that used to be called Flow, this company called Softomotive that's based in the UK, Softomotive, they are a robotic process automation specialist, and Microsoft's going to combine their product, which is called Win Automation, with Power Automate and make sure that those two things can integrate and work together and basically work so that you have, so that when you have tasks that need automation, it'll automatically happen when you're using Power Automate. So again, another, it doesn't tell you that Microsoft's trying to corner that market in and of itself, but they just are trying to make sure their Power platform, which we've talked a lot about on Windows Weekly, is very well situated in the robotic process automation space. So it's all, I always find it interesting to look at who are they buying and Why are they buying them? Yeah, because there are very, very few giant acquisitions that they make, like GitHub and Mojang and those kind of companies. But these little ones kind of give you a hint of where their strategy is going when you think about Microsoft.
Cool. Finally, we need beer.
This is a beer pick for Paul, even though he doesn't drink beer anymore, really. So when you're eating sushi and Japanese food, you know what you don't want to drink? You probably don't want to drink a stout. You probably don't want to drink an IPA even, because it would just overwhelm the subtle flavors of the fish. Some beer makers have thought about this, and they said, you know, what if we made the perfect beer to pair with sushi? So you have an alternate to sake and to wine. One company that does a very nice job of this is called Stillwater Artisanal Ales. It's based in Baltimore. They make a beer called the Stillwater Extra Dry Saison. And when you think of saisons, you think, oh, maybe that would be too powerful also for sushi. But it's not. They've actually made it out of rice. And it really does kind of mimic some of those very subtle flavors that you would get in a wine or a sake that you might want to pair with sushi. It doesn't taste like sake, but it definitely it doesn't drown out the flavors of the things you're eating.
Huh.
So I liked it. I've had it a couple times. It's only 4.2%. It's brewed with a lot of different hops, but it's not overly hoppy. So it really pairs well with things like fish and rice.
I'm a gypsy brewer.
Yes, gypsy brewers.
Yes. I don't have my own still. I just borrow others.
I just go to other places and brew at their stills.
Nice. You don't call it a still. What do you call it?
No.
Still is for spirits.
It is, yeah. So they have brewing tanks. They have brewing tanks, and they have a lot of other equipment, fermenters and all those things in a brewery. So,
So I'm looking at the source code, Leo.
Yeah, what do you think? Clean? Is it beautiful?
I think this is it.
I think you got it.
You do? Yeah.
Does it say, created 1994, Dave Cutler?
Well, no, it doesn't say that, but I'm trying to find
it. Get out of here, you hoose head. I wrote it.
It's a giant tree. It's like Microsoft Land Manager, Corporate Microsoft Corporation, 1989.
Yeah, nice. That's really cool. Neat.
It's it looks real.
Yeah, I'm sure it's real. Why would you? That's a lot of work to fake 5 million lines.
Yeah, it would be.
that's a lot of typing somebody did for no apparent reason.
I thought some other source code of theirs recently leaked, and then it was proven to be something from GitHub, and partial leak or something small or something.
Yeah, okay. There's been all kinds of source code leaks over the years. Some of the original Xbox source code had leaked many years ago. But I think the big deal this past week was that was apparently the entire source code. It was like everything.
Oh.
I'm not sure about the NT part of it, but the Xbox apparently was a big
very
deal.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Paul and Mary Jo, you guys are awesome. I would say you rock, but .NET rocks.
That's right.
So I can't say that. Sorry,
guys.
No, they rock, and they are here every Wednesday, 11 a.m. in the Pacific time zone. That would be 2 p.m. in their time zone, Eastern time zone. It would also be 1700 UTC or 1800 UTC. You could watch live if you want. Go to twit.tv/live. There's audio and video there. You can also be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. They are going to assume their most important role in a moment or two, which is to select a title for this fine show. We have to give them something to do because, you know, idle hands are the devil's workshop. We have downloadable versions at twit.tv/ww. You'll also find it on YouTube. You'll also find it on your favorite device. I don't even know if Cortana will play it, but the other guys will if you just say, hey, you, play the Windows Weekly podcast. Just play it. It just plays.
I don't recommend trying that with Cortana.
I know, Paul Theroux. I've worked with Paul
I don't know Theroux. What you mean. I'm just going to read your emails.
And you are no Paul Theroux. He's Paul Theroux at Theroux.com. His book's at leanpub.com. The Windows 10 Field Guide. Got to get it updated soon for HUD 20. Hey, who? Oh, four.
I've already updated a bunch of it, nice. But it's ongoing.
Ongoing. It's an ongoing process, never ending, like painting the Golden Gate Bridge.
That's right.
Lean Pub.
Yeah, you get to the end and you just go back to the beginning.
Start from the beginning. LeanPub.com. Mary Jo Foley's at ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Both are alive and well and feeling fit as a fiddle, I'm glad to say.
At least a cello.
Yes.
Yes. We're all doing well, which is always, knock on wood, a nice thing. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. And we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye. Stay healthy.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android, where each week I'm joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and a rotating crew of Android journalists, developers, and enthusiasts, where we talk about the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. You can subscribe by going to twit.tv/AAA or find the show in your podcatcher of choice. That's All About Android.